Silicon Valley is not very exciting to look at. Miles and miles of suburban office park buildings broken up by chain restaurants and strip malls. But behind the sterile-looking buildings, some dramatic struggles, fights, and failures are taking place. NPR's Chris Arnold reports on one high-tech entrepreneur's efforts to beat the odds in Silicon Valley.
Late one night 5 years ago, 25-year-old Edward Jackson stumbled onto a very disturbing scene. He'd recently partnered with a man who he thought was the inventor of a breakthrough three-dimensional computer display in hopes of creating a successful company. So he says he was puzzled when he saw the inventor with what looked like a little Sanyo Electronics logo.
I happened to be in the office, and I saw him putting the Sanyo label back onto the display. And working very hurriedly.
Jackson says it turned out this engineer hadn't invented this display at all. He was just beta testing a new product owned by Sanyo. The engineer declined repeated requests for an interview. Jackson says this engineer misled him, using the display as a lure. Jackson had brought in a wealthy friend as an investor who he says had plowed more than $100,000 into the venture.
I had tunnel vision, like, you know, terrible painful migraine. My head was pounding. I felt nauseous. You know, my friend had been swindled. And I felt I'd played a hand in it. It was devastating for me. I felt very naive, like a child, you know, coming to learn about the realities of life. That's how I felt. In 24 hours, I realized that this was a fraud.
Welcome to Silicon Valley. In his next startup, Jackson would be more careful. But first, he needed to find a job. He got hired by a successful, fast-growing software company. But less than a year later, Jackson was frustrated.
I began to get really restless because I was just completely obsessed with the internet.
When he'd suggest internet-related products to his managers, Jackson says they'd drag their feet, and he thought they were missing opportunities. For one, all around him, companies were having trouble hiring good freelance computer programmers. The internet might help them. So Jackson announced to his fiancée, Dina Harp McGovern, that he wanted to quit his job and launch an online temp agency of sorts for programmers. Dina, who calls Edward Jackson EJ, remembers wondering, though, whether that was such a good idea.
EJ is just perpetually optimistic, I think. Sometimes to a fault, maybe.
Even Dina's mother, Lori McGovern, herself a veteran Silicon Valley entrepreneur and investor, thought EJ was being foolish. She wondered, who is this guy her daughter's marrying who can't stick with a good job for even a year where he's learning a lot and getting valuable stock options?
I said, but EJ, it has only been 3 months. I mean, I get very nervous because I just, you know, was concerned about stability.
EJ went ahead anyway and launched the company.
This is the end of fourth quarter of 96. I mean, Netscape had just gone public. I was years ahead.
And this time, EJ picked his partners carefully. The money for the new venture was coming from a wealthy friend who is an experienced real estate investor and entrepreneur. The investor brought in a seasoned CEO with a Harvard MBA to lead the company. So EJ threw himself into writing the code for the startup's website. But soon, he says, his two co-founders were arguing.
The Harvard gentleman wanted my friend out. He felt, well, you know what? He had called my friend, the investor, he called him dumb money. That was the beginning of the end. My friend took that personally. Things started going really downhill.
A week later, EJ heard the CEO screaming in his office.
I walked in and he was cursing at the top of his lungs, you know, calling my friend, you know, mother, various expletives. And I said, well, what's the issue? And then he showed me a letter from Pillsbury Madison Sutro, a very, you know, $450 an hour law firm.
Without actually leaving the company, EJ's friend pulled his money out and was threatening to sue.
So we were screwed. I mean, bottom line is we were screwed. I was bewildered and just didn't know really how to handle the situation.
EJ's future mother-in-law was telling him to walk away from the company immediately and try to get his old job back. But EJ says he just couldn't believe that a Harvard MBA and a millionaire financier would let this argument destroy a promising startup.
So my conclusion was that these are two rational, sound individuals who will come up with an amicable solution. Unfortunately, the reality was their egos were bigger than their rational senses. And even though both showed each other that they could do mutually assured destruction, neither backed down. They fought each other to the very bitter end.
The investor and the CEO say the problem wasn't their egos, but rather a basic business dispute over who should get how much stock. Also, the CEO says EJ was not a hapless victim and was much more wrapped up in the fight with the investor than he claims. In any case, Jackson stayed on for two more months, even though the startup didn't have any funding, but he and his partners remained deadlocked, and with the threat of litigation hanging over the company, no other investors would go near it. The CEO says he still thinks the problems could have been resolved. He says he sunk tens of thousands of dollars of his own money into the venture and implored EJ to stay on longer. But EJ says he'd had enough. He quit and went home to tell his fiancée, Dina.
He came home just completely exhausted and really upset.
I also had to reveal to her because I was too proud to tell her, but we were behind on mortgage payments. And I had to tell her, hey, we're in arrears. And I was going to have to borrow money from her, my future wife, to make ends meet in the short term.
But with his software engineering skills, Jackson says he was quickly able to get back on his feet doing lucrative contract programming jobs. He says that just underscored what a demand there was for a business that would help high-tech companies find good programmers. Then, at the beginning of 1999, EJ heard about Chris Wong, a top software executive who was looking to invest in an internet startup. A friend arranged a breakfast meeting, and Chris Wong says he immediately liked the idea.
After I got out of that meeting, I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't sleep because the idea was great.
Within a week, without telling EJ, Wong called together half a dozen top managers from other high-tech companies. He met with them in a wine cellar to get their input. Chris Wong.
Sat around a little oak table with a candle in the middle and dim lights. Well, what do you think about EJ? Do you think EJ's got what it takes to actually build a company? Who's going to run the company? Where's the money going to come from?
An hour later, Wong had decided to quit his job to run the startup. Someone broke out a laptop and started registering internet domain names for the business. For these executives, raising several million dollars from venture capitalists would be no problem. EJ was about to get a lot of help or get ripped off. If Wong wanted to be greedy, what did he need EJ for? He could hire a different programmer and keep more stock for himself.
You see it all around Silicon Valley. We could have taken his idea and cut him out completely. We could have brought him in and fired him. Fortunately, I'm not that type of person.
Chris Wong didn't do that. Instead, he asked EJ to be his founding partner. This time, EJ wasn't taking any chances. He got his tough former CEO mother-in-law to wrestle with Wong until he agreed to give EJ a fair chunk of founding stock and put it in writing. And this time, the deal held together. Less than 2 years later, SkillsVillage.com has 80 employees and is managing freelance workforces for a range of large companies. Like many dot-com founders, Jackson is still talking about the day, sometime in the future, when his company will become profitable. But with steady increases in revenue and a management team that works well together, Jackson is convinced that this time he will make it. Chris Arnold, NPR News, San Francisco.